Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Beautiful tats all over my back. Makes me so proud, I'm gonna shout it out loud. I got another tattoo, baby. Yeah. Another tattoo,
another tattoo. No part of me's blank, I'm really ink obsessed. Yeah. It's like an art show the moment that I get undressed. Check. At every job interview, they're just so impressed. Really? Cause I got all my ex-wives on my chest. Over here is Clay Aiken, there's a side of bacon. And I'm in a torpedo fighting with Satan. Yeah. Next to Hello Kitty and a zombie ice skating. Yeah. It's Ronald Reagan.
I've got these dragons, I've got these dolphins. All those scribes on me indelibly. I've had bad reactions, bad infections, even hepatitis C.
I just love the look on your face right now.
I need therapy, maybe some laser surgery. Surgery for the flaming dolphins on my knee.
Quite frankly, I'm reading something I wrote when I was
Well,
what in the world is that?
Well, good. Yeah, mixed with this. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome in. And, of course, happy Saturday to all of you. And, of course, I got that blue-eyed handsome man sitting across from me, Mr. Steve Silva.
Oh, I'm here, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I'm Sean Roberts, and this is your Weekly Dose Podcast.
And now, we thank you for joining us today. We're streaming live from Orange County, California. California, it's a new state. If you're new to the Weekly Dose, this program is about having fun and laughing.
That's right, laughing at all the things that we experience in life. The embarrassing things, the silly things, the awkward things, the fun things, and even the naughty things.
You know, the things that connect us all. The things that make us human. And as they say, laughter is the best medicine.
That's right. To all of our listeners, old and new, we love it when you guys are part of the show. So enjoy the conversation. You can do that in several ways, like comment on our website, yourweeklydose.com.
Send a message via Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1.
Say hello to us on Facebook at yourweeklydose.
Or if you want to send us a personal message, you can email us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com.
That's right. Today's show, well, we got a pretty cool thing going on. We'll be doing some catching up. We got, hopefully, a pocket-sized cinema. We'll be discussing possibly what a Wrong Way Corrigan actually is and how it came about. And at 10:30, we'll be interviewing Prince Fleet Easton, a really nice, talented gentleman that I will be performing with in Las Vegas come next month. So we'll be introducing all Southern California to him, basically, as
Prince
of our
Lee
Fleet.
Fleet.
Fleet
Prince
Easton.
Fleet
Easton.
Easton.
Yes.
Very good. I wonder if he's related to Sheena.
I have no idea. But, you know, as always, you can always download the show for free from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go and you can subscribe to us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify, just search for Your Weekly Dose. And most importantly, tell the world what you think of us. So please rate and review the show. And, of course, today's theme song was Another Tattoo by the great Weird Al Yankovic, because today is National Tattoo Day. So that's why we are playing that song there for you. And, of course, as always, any of the music that we play here on our show, you can always get from our main sponsor, Amazon, just by going to our website and clicking on our banner there. Just like that.
Just click.
Just click away. Click away. Click away. Click away. And make sure you bookmark it, too. And that way, anytime you do any shopping on Amazon, we get a little bit of kickback. So that way we stay on the air. So we like that.
Yeah, and those pennies come in handy.
They definitely do. So make sure when you're shopping or whatever, you tell them to
shut up and take my money.
Because that's what they'll do. And then they'll give
us.
Yeah, they'll take the majority of it. We'll get the pennies on it. And we love it that way. So we don't mind at all whatsoever. All right. Well, you know what? We're just zooming right along right now, so let's just go ahead and start catching up with each other.
Well, all right. Ba-dum.
Mm-hmm.
Ba-dum. Ba-dum. Bum, bum, bum.
So how was your week, bud?
It was very nice.
What did you do? Anything exciting?
Not really. I watched some movies and stuff like we were talking about earlier. I watched a movie with Rodney Dangerfield from the year 2000, and John Panette was in it. They were talking about him.
If you guys have not heard John Panette, oh my God, the man is freaking amazing.
He really is
amazing.
Really funny.
Overweight gentleman, you know, definitely obese, but that's where his whole comedy plays comes around and everything. And he plays on it. His very first CD was called Show Me the Buffet. And I first heard of John when he was when they played him here locally in Los Angeles on KLOS called the 5 o'clock Funnies, and they would play comedians at 5 o'clock. So you know during the 5 o'clock hour, so that way when you're stuck in traffic here in Los Angeles, you got something to laugh at, basically. And I literally had to pull over. I was laughing so hard. I literally had to pull over when I heard him. I mean, he was hysterical.
When he first started, he actually focused on doing impersonations. And he's really good.
Yeah.
Really good. So
And a good singer, too. He had a great singing voice.
Yeah. He did Michael Jackson. It was like, oh, my gosh.
And then I think later on in his career, too, he did Hairspray. He played the John Travolta part, the wife, in Hairspray on Broadway, no doubt, you know.
On Broadway.
And did a beautiful job, beautiful job. And unfortunately, John's passed, but definitely check it out. Jump on YouTube, look up John Panette, and you are going to laugh your butt off. We guarantee that.
Absolutely.
So what was the movie about with Rodney Dangerfield?
Well, Rodney Dangerfield is this big real estate guy in Los Angeles. He's like a billionaire, and he's got all this money, and he's had like great luck. And he gets a tip on some land in Utah that he decides to go and buy and put a ski resort there because it's sort of up near the mountains.
Okay.
And there are people trying to stop him. John Biner.
Oh, my gosh. I remember John Biner.
Yeah, he's the banker, and John Panette is his assistant.
Oh, geez.
And they're trying like hell to screw Rodney up because Rodney, in order to get this land, had to end up... Oh, boy. It was in a town where they practiced polygamy.
Oh, geez.
So when a man dies, all of his estate, the wives are included... So in order to get this land, he had to end up joining the church and marrying these three wives. And then as it goes along, one of the three wives' two sisters are married to another man who dies. And so he ends up marrying those two. So he has five wives. And he's doing well, having a good time. And he doesn't realize that Biner and Panette are trying to... screw him out of the land, trying to catch him doing something wrong so that he can get excommunicated and lose the land so they can get it. Because their boss, mob boss, Andrew Dice Clay, is threatening to kill him. And then Andrew Dice Clay's boss is Jerry Stiller.
Oh, geez.
So it was really pretty funny.
Dude, it's kind of like an all-star cast of who's who kind of thing.
Rodney could do that. He could get these stars in and do this movie. So it was just a fun, mindless romp.
That's funny.
So
let the comedy ensue.
Yeah, it's called My Five Wives, and really liked it.
Well, that's cool. I'll have to check it out then.
I've been trying to watch movies I've never seen before, and so you know I have like Tubi TV on my my tablet, and I just go in and look for comedies and stuff mostly.
Right,
and it's pretty cool.
Binge watching with my wife this TV show called Lucifer, which is really interesting. It's like in four or five seasons. Tom Ellis plays the main character, Lucifer. And it's a spinoff from the CW Arrowverse kind of a thing. Tom Ellis played Lucifer in a few episodes with that. And so it's also part of the DC Comics kind of a thing, too.
Okay.
And the whole premise of it is where Lucifer gets kind of bored with hell kind of a thing and decides to come to Earth and just to see, hang out, what's going on kind of a thing. And he then befriends a detective with the Los Angeles, with the LAPD, basically. Mm-hmm. A very attractive gal. I can't remember the actress's name, but she, her character is a former actress turned cop because her father used to be a cop. And her big claim to fame is that she did a movie where the where she showed her breasts. And it's kind of like a Phoebe Cates kind of a thing, you know. So it's that kind of a fame that she gained. Mm-hmm. But in, so she kind of got stereotyped or whatever. So just, she decided to leave Hollywood and then become an actual cop and follow her in her father's footsteps. Meanwhile, Lucifer, Morningstar, the devil himself, helps her solve all these different murder cases and everything. So
how bizarre.
And it's really interesting. It can be fun because the guy who plays Lucifer is hysterical. He has a British accent and he's very cheeky in the way he says things and so forth. It's really funny. And I think I'm already like in the fourth season right now watching it. So, and it's been fun. I've been watching it on Netflix. So, and other than that, just kind of getting ready for some gigs. I got a gig tomorrow, or actually not tomorrow, tonight.
Good God. Yeah, good thing you.
Hello. tonight at Phil Tranny's in Long Beach. So I'll be performing out there on the patio. So make sure you guys call the restaurant, Phil Tranny's. Just kind of Google, and they will make reservations for you guys out there. So I'll be there from 6 to 9 p.m. doing my acoustic thing. I don't know what that is. So
acoustic thing.
Yeah. Doing some.
It's a new instrument.
It is. It is. You know, so it's, I'll be doing my unplugged acoustic rock. So come on out and join me tonight. So it'll be fun. I'm really looking forward to it. So,
Is there room in your car for me?
Yeah, actually there should be.
Okay.
Yeah, actually should be because it's
the, if there is, I'm
it's minimal. So.
Go, so
okay, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Far out.
So yeah, so just kinda get ready for that and everything and see what happens and going with the flow on that and that good old stuff. So but you know, we do have a sponsor we want to push right now. A very important person for us.
Do 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 do. Do, 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 do.
You know, with things starting to open up slowly, it seems that businesses everywhere will be needing some new signs.
Well, not just businesses, but how about bands needing new merchandise, companies needing new canopies for conventions?
Yep, and where does one go for printing merchandise? Simple, go where we go, StrangerPrints.com.
Stranger Prince is the official merchandise printer for your weekly dose.
Deuce, yeah.
Deuce.
Yeah.
They do all of our shirts we give away, but that's not all they do.
Nope, that's right. They do so much more, like table covers, canopies, graduation signs and banners, regular banners, stickers, slip mats for DJs, backdrops, sports jerseys, and so much more.
So for all your printing needs for merchandise, go where we go, Stranger Prince.
That's right. Just go to StrangerPrints.com for more information and pricing.
That's StrangerPrints.com. And tell them your weekly dose sent you.
Yep, because, damn it, we did.
and damn it, they like us. All right. It's kind of cool. I have a sponsor.
I love having sponsors. They help us out so much.
Anybody out there listening, you know, who wants to have an advertisement on our show, we're always open to good stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Should we try to do this real quick?
Sure.
All right, because you know what? Our audience hasn't had much of this in quite a while.
That's true.
Yeah. So something that we like to give you guys some class.
Some culture.
Something we like to call
pocket-sized cinema.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And welcome to Pocket Size Cinema. To Today's feature is entitled Fear No Evil. Fear No Evil. Fear No Evil. We open one bright, beautiful, sunny morning. Everyone in a tiny Smithville wakes up early and goes to the local church. Before services start, the townspeople sit in their pews and talk about their lives, their families, etc. Suddenly, at the altar, amidst an explosion of fire, Satan appears. Oh my goodness. Everyone starts screaming and running to the front entrance, trampling each other in their determined efforts to get away from the evil incarnate. Soon, everyone is evacuated from the church except for one man, who sits calmly in his pew, seemingly oblivious to the fact that God's ultimate enemy is in his presence. This confuses Satan just a bit. So let's pick up the action here, shall we? Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Fear No Evil.
Hey, don't you know who I am?
Yep, sure do.
Well, aren't you afraid of me?
Nope, sure ain't.
Not even one little bit?
Not even one little bit.
Really?
Really.
And tell me, why are you not afraid of me?
Well, I've been married to your sister for 25 years. How bad could you be? Our guest today is truly a talented man. In the entertainment industry, we call him a triple threat. He can dance, he can act, he can sing. He studied at the American Ballet Theater, the Ballet Arts, and took master dance classes at the world-renowned Juilliard School. Holy cow. He's toured nationally and on stage and has appeared in a number of featured films and television shows. He's moved to California in 2007. In 2008, that's right, only a year later, he won the Desert Idol competition in Palm Springs, California. He's also received numerous awards for his time and talent with various charities. And in 2016, he was crowned the Prince of Palm Springs. And I hope I get this right, by H.H. Prince Mario Max Schomburg, Lip of Germany. Wow, boy, that's a mouthful there. Can you please welcome to the show Prince Fleet Easton? How are you, Prince?
I'm doing wonderful.
Prince Fleet. Absolutely, brother. How is your morning going so far?
Well, my morning's doing great. I'm just sitting here having my coffee and waiting to have this wonderful conversation with you guys.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, to let you guys know, I've met Prince Fleet just recently because we are both being part of something that we're going to talk a little bit about later on, though. And that is going to be a tribute concert to the great Trini Lopez that's coming up on August 11th in Las Vegas. And Prince Fleet here is going to be the opening act for this whole extravaganza. So I'm really looking forward to meeting him face to face. So, but Brent, let's get to know you a little bit overall. First of all, I want to know, how did you get the name Fleet?
All right. Well, in 1986, I was usually my management tells me not to tell the story, but you know what? I like it. So in 1986, my management at that time kept saying, we need to come up with a unique name that people will remember. Well, this is not what they had planned. But while throwing names around, I happened to go to the facility and I happened to see a box sitting there and it had a name on it. And I looked down, and of course, you know what I'm probably talking about. And I looked at it and I went, oh my God, that's my name. So I came back out and I said, I got my name. And they said, what's that? And I said, it's Fleet. And they just looked at me like I was like, I had two heads. And I said, you know what? I said, you know what? That's my name. And it's been that since 1986. And now it's just, I've embraced it and it's who I am.
Awesome. So speaking of your career, Fleet,
here you are, born in Akron, Ohio.
Yes.
How does a young kid from Akron, Ohio get into the entertainment industry and get to study at the American Ballet Theater and, of all places, Juilliard School?
Well, it wasn't easy. No. I was born with the ability. At 5 years old, I did my first solo with an orchestra, with a big orchestra.
Really?
I sang, yes, at 5 years old. But I always knew what I was going to do. You know, I really have always said, you don't call it, it calls you. And it was always there. Even as a little kid, I was singing and dancing around the house. And my relatives kept saying, God, you got to put this kid in show business. And, you know, in Akron, Ohio, there's not too much show business going on.
Right.
And then when I was, well, I did stuff on and off. But when I was 17, that's when I really turned professional. A friend of mine in high school got tired of me saying I want to be in show business. And they said one day, they come over and said, get in the car. And I said, where are we going? And they said, it doesn't matter. Get in the car. And they took me to Goodyear Musical Theater, which was a professional theater. I auditioned for a show and got the part, and that sealed the deal. I knew then exactly what I was going to do the rest of my life, and I've been very fortunate that I've done that my whole life. So during that time of doing the musicals at Goodyear Musical Theater, they had me – at that time, I had had no dance training, but – I was just kind of a natural, and I could watch you and I could mimic exactly what they were doing. So the dance choreographer and stuff would throw out all these terminologies, you know, tergite, you know, ensemble, you know, and I thought, you know what, I better start taking some classes and find out what the hell these terminology means. So they don't discover that I really don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going along with it, you know?
Right.
So I started taking classes, and within 3 years, because I was a natural, I never paid for a class. I was always given scholarship after scholarship after scholarship, and that's kind of what happened. And within about 3 years, I was in New York City and taking classes at every major place there was. And then once a week, I was taking master classes at Juilliard. And of course, you know, you just don't go in there and do that. You have to qualify. And then,
right.
You know, I also auditioned at American Ballet Theater. And George Balanchine actually said that I had the feet. I don't know if you remember of Nijinsky, who was a famous ballet dancer in the early part of the 19th century. And he said, oh my God, you've got such an arch in your foot. You've got his feet. And I said, well, maybe I should give him back. I might be ruining him. I don't know. So that's how I ended up doing that. And then that was for a few years until I started having some knee issues. And then when the knee issues started, and all my teachers were on like crutches and canes, and you know, I mean, it's beautiful, but it destroys your body, especially
right.
if you're a male, because you're forcing your body to do things that's not natural.
Supposed
for your
body. To do, yeah. How tough was it though to stay in Juilliard or the American Ballet? I mean, because these are such prestigious schools.
Once you get in the school and stuff, you're actually going through training, and then what they do is they select the people from the classes. If you're showing ability and you know you're improving and all, and they feel that you're ready for performances, then that's when you're selected and you move out. You're still taking classes, but then you move into like the court of ballet and stuff. And I was being groomed to be a premier dancer with Vladimir Dolgodowsky, who was a big Russian famous dancer at that time.
Wow.
He was the only one in the world that could turn 30, I think it was 32 times without stopping in a pirouette. I mean, this guy was like, amazingly young. And so they weren't real happy when I walked in, and I said, you know what, I'm done. I'm in pain. I don't want to continue doing this. And like I said, giving me scholarship after scholarship after scholarship, you know, but you know what, I had to do what I had to do. And I said, I'm leaving here and I'm going into main show business. And that's what I did.
So you leave the American Ballet and Juilliard and everything, and you go into the world of what now? It was it mainly musical theater? Or?
Yeah, well, you know what? I auditioned for shows, but, you know, I was known as being known as a dancer. That's what they always wanted me for, and I wanted more than that. Mm-hmm. So I just said, you know what? I'm leaving New York, and I went back to Ohio. And I was trying to figure out, okay, I want to be in nightclubs and do my thing, you know. So actually, I went and bought a guitar, taught myself to play it. And then I started, about 6 months later, I started entering, like, talent contests. And the first one, I tied for first. So I don't know. I forget what I even got. I don't know. And then the second one, when I went out, it was so funny that night. I told my mother, I said, you know what? I'm going to win this, and they're going to love me so much that they're going to hire me. And actually, and that's exactly what happened. The next day I won, and the next day at 4 o'clock, the leader of the band called me, hired me. I became the lead singer of the band for 4 years.
That's pretty good.
Whoa. So that was my training ground, you know, and then I worked with a lot of combos and stuff. And then when I moved to Florida, I had the opportunity to start working with orchestras again, and I sang with orchestras, and I sang with an opera company. You know, I've never had a voice lesson in my life. It was just
really
always, no, never. No voice training at all. It was just always there. And then when I was in Florida, I was working 5 different jobs, but one of them I was singing with a classical company and doing opera pieces and all. And they were looking for someone to fill the male role, and I was recommended to them. And it's so funny. The lady who started the opera, this company called the Bel Canto Ensemble, she was with she'd been with the New York Metropolitan Opera years ago. And so I met her, and I'd never heard of her. Now, we lived in the same town for all these years and never met. And so she said, oh, honey, she says, you know, you got a beautiful voice, but you have to sing classical pieces. I said, well, you know, I can do that. I know I can, because I believe I can do anything. I've never had the thought ever that I couldn't do something. So she said, go home, learn a piece, and come back and sing it for me in a couple of weeks. So I went home. I learned Nessun Dorma from Turandot. And I went back 3 weeks later, sang it for her, and she fell off her chair, and she said, what you are capable of doing with no training is beyond amazing. And I was with them for 5 years.
Wow. So there's no vocal warm-ups or anything like that? There's no...
You know what? I've never had... I can get up out of a dead sleep and sing an opera aria because I don't think I can't do it. See, that's the thing. I guess because I have a lot of friends who have done major training and all, and they're kind of like in that mindset that you got to go through all the stuff. You got to go through vocal warm-ups, and you got to do that and all that stuff. And I just look at them and I think, really? And they look at me like, how the hell do you do that? I said, because I don't think I can't do it. And that's just how I live my life.
Wow. That's just amazing, you know, that to get, because I know sometimes for vocalists, even like in the morning, how hard it's difficult to get your voice warmed up to hit high notes even.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and for you to get up and to know how to just instinctively use your diaphragm.
Yeah.
You know, that's just amazing, because, I mean, that's something that definitely has to be taught. For me, I didn't learn to do it until I started playing saxophone when I was in high school.
Oh, okay.
And so...
Well, you know, go ahead. Yeah. I was going to say I worked with many, many, you know, people I worked with over the years saying, God, you have such control. It's amazing. Now, you got to remember, when I perform, I'm climbing up scaffolding and I'm swinging from chandeliers and doing a lot of physical activity at the same time while singing.
Ooh. Where do you breathe?
I don't.
Because, you know, I've only seen one other person really do that, and I take it that his sister kind of does it too. But I mean, most of the time when we see people of that nature, it's the old school, you know, it's the old Frank Sinatra kind of a thing or whatever. But where I saw Michael Jackson when he did his film This Is It, where I'm thinking, oh, you know, he's probably using backtracks or this or that. No, Michael is singing and dancing through that headset microphone, and out comes that smooth voice we're always used to hearing naturally. And, of course, I've always had great respect for Michael. But after seeing that, it just shot through the stratosphere for me on his talent.
Do you know who Contrell Blue is?
Yeah.
She had to hit him up. Okay, she's a friend of mine. And a few years ago, she came to my birthday party and sang. And I did a two-hour show. I do two-hour shows without stopping. I sing anywhere from, about 40 some songs. It depends. I've sang up to 70 songs without stopping, with no break. And she said, you know what, Fleet? She says, I can definitely say I have worked with Beyonce, I've worked with Justin Timberlake, and I've worked with all these different people, and I've never seen anybody do what you do. She said, I've never seen them be able to sustain the energy and keep going like you do. She said, it's amazing.
Wow. That's a testament to you then, my friend.
Well, you know, it's not always going to be. You know, one day, I'm sure, you know, we're all getting older every day. So, you know, I'm just hanging on as long as I can.
That's all you can do. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. What made you then decide to move out to California?
All right, here we go into the next phase of my life. Okay, now, some people are going to think this is weird, but this is not for me. I have a voice that guides me and tells me what to do. I'm very deeply spiritual. And so it's led me to a lot of my successes if I follow it to what it says to the letter. So while I was singing with a 52-piece orchestra in Florida, the voice came in while I'm on stage. I'm singing like, I think it was 5,000 people attending. So I'm singing and the voice says, you must go to Palm Springs, California. You have to be there to meet the people who are going to take you to the next place in your life and career. And I'll tell you, I really didn't know anybody here. I'd been here on tour, but I really didn't know anybody on a personal level. So I thought, okay, well, it's telling me I got to go, so I got to go. And at that time, I was starring in a theatrical production company called the Brevard Theatrical Ensemble. I was a co-host of a television show called Brevard Notes. I was singing with the opera company. I was singing with the orchestra. And then I was also doing reports for NASA on the shuttle launch landings. So
wow.
I walked away from everything and packed up my car and drove 3,000 miles all the way across I-10. All the way to Palm Springs, California. It took me 6 days. I'm really glad that I had the tenacity to think I could do it. I would never attempt it again by myself. My family was like freaking out going, oh, you can't do this. You know, that's 3,000 miles. I said, you know what? I drive 400 miles a day round trip to Orlando, Florida. What's the difference if I'm driving 400 miles a day, just and going in a straight line? And that's how I looked at it. And I kept thinking, you know, I'm like Lewis and Clark, and I'm trudging a pathway through the wilderness to California, and then all my family can follow behind me in the wagon train, you know.
How crazy did your friends think you were to drop everything of all these wonderful projects to just go out there and go, I'm just going to go?
Well, they thought I was insane. They said, you know what? You're doing so well here and you're successful. You're crazy. Everybody said, you're crazy. You're crazy. I said, but you know what? I said, not just the voice telling me to do this, but I was working in a secondary market. And I was doing television and movies, but, you know, they always bring in the stars from either L.A. or Hollywood. And, you know, you get the bit parts or, you know, you get a featured extra part and stuff. And
right.
I wanted more than that. I mean, I knew, well, as I said, as a child, I knew kind of knew what my destiny was. So I had the realization that, okay, in a secondary market, I'm never going to achieve what I'm trying to achieve here. So that also spurred me on to take the chance and go there. And every time the voice tells me to do something, it always leads me to a success. So I trusted in blind faith that everything was going to be okay.
And you do so many things. There's so many things I want to talk about with you.
Okay.
First of all, you and I have a number of friends in common. Notice that on our Facebook pages and everything. Steve, I don't think you know this, but he's really good friends also with Kat, our friend Kat Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, And then, and of course, Tom Plant with that.
Right.
And but one thing that took me by surprise was that, and I got to meet this gal through Kat because she invited me to her, was the Pink Lady.
Yes.
How did you get involved with her? How did that come about, meeting her?
I'm trying to think. I think the first time we met, I did an event. She was like blown away by what I did. And of course, you know, she's 88, something like that. And this woman is still producing shows. She has a television show. I mean, this woman has energy like you wouldn't believe. And she wrote the book, It's Not Over Until I Say It Is. And I think I met her at an event and we just kind of connected. And she said, you know what? I want to open doors for you in Hollywood, because she knows everybody and everybody knows her. You know, matter of fact, a couple years ago, she was featured in Taylor Swift's video, one of her videos, which was
amazing. Really?
Oh, yeah. She knows Taylor Swift. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's fine. I can't remember the name of the song, but it was great. It was about four or five years ago. So, she just started booking me for some major events. I did the Hollywood Cemetery, the Hollywood Cemetery, where the Columbarium is. Uh-huh. What they did was they built 80,000 niches for servicemen and women that they could be placed there if they choose to at the Columbarium. And I did the grand opening 2 years ago with Gary Sinise, and it was amazing. And it was, and all these people were from the White House. All these dignitaries were there. It was very exciting. I was a VIP, and I sat on the platform with all of them, and I sang for it. And it was filmed for posterity, and the footage all went into the National Library Archives and will not be open for 100 years. Jeez. Because in 100 years, they will do it again. And I laughed at the Pink Lady, and I said, well, I guess I won't be here for the next one. And
Very true.
But I'm just saying, like, those opportunities. And then I did a big event for her at the Los Angeles Coliseum after the renovation, the reopening of the Coliseum. I did that for her. So we have a really great rapport, and her partner, Chaplain Dove, we have a love fest. I love her and she loves me, and we all live in one big happy family.
Yeah, she's definitely an amazing lady. Like you said, the energy that comes off of her is just, I mean, it blew me away. You know, it absolutely blew me away.
Well, you know, she's only like 4 foot, oh God, maybe 4'10", if that. And she has a
waist of a 5-year-old boy, you know. I mean, she's so thin.
Under my shoulder. She comes up, when I stand next to her, her head doesn't even practically come to my shoulder. And I've told her, I said, you know what, I love being photographed with you because you make me look tall.
Well, you can imagine how I feel next to her because I'm 5'10".
Oh, God.
So, you know.
She'd look like a doll.
Exactly. You currently also have an animation show that's going on. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, it's called The Barkingtons. One of the creators of the movie Zootopia, Brian Hoff, has created this. He actually, 10 years ago, he started with another cartoon series called The Fast and the Furious, 009 Canine Cop, which is a dog. it's based on his dog, and the dog with a tuxedo and all, and kind of like a James Bond type of character. And the names are hysterical. But he created this new cartoon series called The Barkingtons, and it's a family of dogs. I think, now he hasn't really affirmed it, but I think it's kind of based on the Kardashians. You didn't hear that from me.
Okay.
And it's all about these family of dogs, and they're kind of like, you know, their life is like dysfunctional in some aspects. And it's just, it's really funny. And I am a meerkat on the show. Most everybody else is a dog, but when they approached me about doing the series, they said, what kind of character would you like to be? And I said, I want to be a meerkat. And then later I thought, well, you know what? That's all. Disney has a lot of meerkats, but that's okay. I'm going to be a different meerkat. And so they sent off to the animation people and created this character and stuff. And then when it came back, I said, well, it needs a crown. And so now they have a little crown on it that's really cute. And I asked Brian, I said, well, what is the character's name? And he said, well, it's going to be your name. It's going to be Prince Fleet Easton. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, I want to immortalize you for posterity. So you'll go down in history as a cartoon character. And this, he's going to be a singer. And they already did a promo video that hasn't come out yet. It's so funny because I'm known as a table dancer. I get, like I said, I get up on stuff and tables and scaffolding and all. Uh-huh. So the little character for the promo thing, he's on the table while everybody's around the table and he's singing Uptown Funk. And hit this at Ice Cold Michelle Five, you know, and it is so funny. But he has a little voice like this when he talks. Hi, everybody. So it's in development still. The BBC is very, very interested. There's some famous people involved in this, but I can't mention their names.
Oh, sure,
now,
of course.
Until there's a release. But I think it's going to be great. I am honored and so excited to be a part of this project.
Going back to some of the people that we both know.
Yeah.
About a year and a half, 2 years ago now, we had the opportunity to interview Trini Lopez.
Yes.
And you got to know Trini, I think, a little bit more on a deeper level since him being a resident of Palm
right.
Springs as well. How did that relationship develop between the two of you?
Well, I'm going to share what I shared with you yesterday. We had when our little conversation we got to meet. That it was really funny. The first time I met Trini was in at a party in Hollywood, and my friend Georgia Durandi, who was a really kind of famous stunt car woman, and she wrote the book also The Company She Keeps, because she had an interesting life too. So people want to look that up and see why she had an interesting life. So we met at the Rock Hudson Estate here in Palm Springs. She invited me to it. It was really wonderful. And I met Jane Russell, Julie Newmar, Rod Kewen, Stella Stevens, and a lot. There was probably at least 50 stars there, you know, of that era.
Right.
And so she said, you know, I really want to help you and I really want to open doors for you. I really like you and there's an energy there. And so she had a big Christmas party and invited me to the Christmas party. So, and there was a lot of stars there. So she was taking me around and introducing me. And then she took me up and introduced me to Trini.
Uh-huh.
And now, I had been singing, you know, around in clubs and hotels here. And I know Trini had come in a couple times. We had not met, but I know he had been out in the audience and stuff. Mm-hmm. So she walked me up to him and she said, Trini, this is at that time I was Fleet Easton. And she said, have you ever heard him sing? And he said, yeah, and he's okay. it was like somebody stuck a knife in me and was turning it and turning it, you know, because I want approval, you know, I came here to get approval. So I kind of walked away and it was like, you know, and I was harboring and festering this like and so about 9 or 10 years later, I was singing here in a club and he came in and I guess 10 years had changed a lot of things and we just started talking and then he became, would come to my shows and I would go over and set with him and his manager early, after I was done. And I was very honored. He said to me, he said, you know, kid, he said, out of all the people that I know of here, you're the only one that really has the it factor, and I really believe you're going to do something. Well, that ten years of anger just melted away. It was like, oh my God, now I'm accepted. You know, now I'm part of the group. And we were very fortunate. I did a few shows with him, and it was really wonderful. And he was always supportive and always asking me about what I was up to and what, you know, what I'm doing in my career at the time. Mm-hmm. And So that's how I got to know him. Did we hang out, you know, at his house? I never was invited to his house, but whenever he was out, we always spent quite a bit of time together.
Mm-hmm. And from your perspective in spending those times, what was he like privately?
Oh, he was always very kind and gracious. I mean, he was always to everybody, always seemed very interested in what you were doing, and always encouraging, always very encouraging.
Yeah. One thing we got from him is just how grounded he was after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because towards the end of our conversation with him, we asked him, you know, said, you know, obviously, you know, you can be taken away from us at any given time, and we pray that it doesn't happen for another, you know, 10, 15 years or so. But when the big man upstairs does call you, what is it that you want to be remembered for?
Mm-hmm.
And he got a little bit choked up with us, you know, in that moment. And, you know, because it was a real moment for him. And he just goes, I just want to be remembered of being a nice guy.
That's great. Yeah. See, that's what I want to do.
You know.
You know what? They always say, when you leave, it's what you leave behind is the way you make people feel. That's what they remember, how you made them feel.
Mm-hmm.
And always be a nice guy. And that's what I really strive to be. You know, it's very easy in this business to people get the wrong perception of you because you have to be slightly guarded and stuff all the time because you get bombarded by everybody and everything. And people can take that in a perception that you're aloof or, you know, you're not approachable. I'm very approachable, and I talk to everybody. I really hope that will always maintain no matter how successful I become.
When we were talking to Trini, you know, he was so gracious with us and just so open also with all the questions that I had prepared. And, mm-hmm. You know, it was a really, really good interview that we had. And he had a good time with talking with us too overall. And, yeah, I'm just sorry that we did not get a chance to do a second interview with him because that was something we really wanted to do.
Well, I was sharing with you, you know, it's really amazing that people do not realize that, you know, he at one time he was in the whole world. He was the biggest star in the world because he had all of the countries, you know, not just mm-hmm. the United States, but he all the Latin countries and all. And he outsold the Beatles in albums.
Oh, yeah.
And he never – he always – did covers. All of the songs were covers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's amazing to have that level of a career with just covers.
Right, right. And he definitely had his own style with it. I mean, because you look at his first album, you know, Live at PJ's.
Yeah.
You know, the majority of them are folk songs.
Uh-huh.
But he turned them into rock and roll songs. And that was something that I think very few people were able to do, but Trini was able to do it, I think, the right way. Because
right.
I've heard other people try and do it, and it just didn't work. And Trini took it and goes, no, 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 you guys are doing it wrong. This is how it should be done.
And right. Go ahead. The great Keely Smith told me one time, she said, always remember, you're a song stylist. You take a song and you put your stamp on it. That's what makes it different and unique. Never try to be like someone else. Never try to sound like someone else. Do what you know is right for you, mm-hmm. and that will always lead you to your success. Put your stamp on it. And that's what he did. He would take
absolutely.
A song and put
it on it. Absolutely. You know, I mean, he's been one of my influences for sure growing up. As I was talking to you yesterday, you know, my parents went to go see him perform at PJ's. And of course, the way they talk about it, you know, makes it sound like they went down every week, and I'm sure it wasn't. That was probably every, you know, couple of months they go down to go see him, but you know, they would go down and go see Trini and see him perform, and then when he, you know, got signed and made it big and everything, you know, I had, you know, my parents bought the record, and I wore that record out because I had to sleep to it, and I had to wake up to it, and I had to go back to sleep to it again, you know, so to hear his voice, to hear how he did. you know, a blues song like Kansas City, or hear how he did a Latino song like Guantanamera. You know, there was something that was truly unique about it. I mean, he even took a song from the musical West Side Story, America, and really made it his own. And as a guitar player, I noticed that there's a certain style in the way he did it, where it was, he was constantly switching chords in the way he did it. And there's some where I'm still trying to figure out, what the hell is he doing? You know, kind of a thing, because it's not played the straight way of doing it, kind of a thing.
Well, you know, he took Charlie Chaplin's Smile, which is a sad ballad, you know, smile though your heart is aching.
Right.
Smile. He made it an up-tempo. Smile, even though it's breaking. Smile, even though, you know, I mean, it's like, wow. I mean, who would think to take that song and make it a fast up-tempo song? I mean, that's just amazing.
Yeah, and that just kind of, I think, shows a good to his talents on how he was able to interpret a song and go, let's do something a little bit different. You know, it's, let's really make it melancholy.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a thing. You've got a very sad lyric, but you're going to, you know, crank the music up to 10 and rock out with it. You know, to me, it's no different than David Lee Roth singing I'm Just a Gigolo when he's singing the line, I ain't got nobody.
Yeah.
You know, but you're singing it to a happy tune.
Right.
You know, because
right.
if you take that line by itself, it's a very sad line. I ain't got nobody.
And you got to remember, that song was done by Keeley Smith and Louis Prima 30 years before that.
Right. Right. You know, and they did it back then, too. You know, and that's just it. You that's the whole thing of you're singing this song. And you're dancing in the way, you're going, wait a minute, but I'm singing, I ain't got nobody. What's wrong with me? What's going on? You know, kind of a thing.
Yeah,
so,
right. It's an oxymoron.
It is, very much so. Fleet, for this show that we're going to be doing in Vegas in honor of Trini,
right.
You're going to be the opening act overall. Joe Chavira, who's a friend of both of ours, both of us. Worked with Trini, obviously, the last 5 years of Trini's life, and, you know, got to write some original music with Trini.
Right.
But yet you're going to be the opening act for this whole extravaganza. What are we going to see when we see you hit the stage?
High energy. Well, they call me Bruno Rocchi, so I'm a cross between Bruno Mars and Liberace.
I love that. Bruno Rocchi. That's got to go.
Yeah, somebody gave me that moniker, and I was like, I like that. Yeah, you know, I have that little...
Now, do you have a brother, George?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But let's put it right. Yeah, I like to wear glitz, but to a where it's classy, not over the top like Liberace did, but I like some glitz there. And
yeah.
Stuff.
I do have a little bit of a sample here that was sent over to me, though. It's called Happy September.
Uh-huh.
So I want to go ahead and play that a little bit so people can get an idea of your vocal talents here.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
It may sound crazy what I'm about to say. The sunshine is here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With a year. Here's why, because I'm happy, clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy, clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy, clap along if you feel like that's what you wanna do. Because I'm happy, clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Don't bring me down, can't nothing. Bring me down, my level's too high. Bring me down, I can't nothing. Bring me down, I said I don't bring me down, I can't nothing. Bring me down, my level's too high. Bring me down, I can't nothing. Bring me down because do you remember
last night of September, love was changing the mind of pretenders while chasing the clouds away. Yeah. Our souls were ringing to the song that our souls were singing as we danced in the night. Do you remember how the stars stole the night away? Yeah, yeah. And they went by.
There you go. That's a strong voice, dude. Man, that is nice. And we started cheer dancing when September came on too. So just
oh, I was actually dancing. I was dancing.
There you go.
Well, good, man. I mean, it's going to be, I think, a very fun show. You know, Joe seems to really, I think, gathered the community of Palm Springs because. You know, it's really the entertainment industry is really, really interesting. It's got because you have famous people, you know, and but then you have somebody who I like to call the entertainer's entertainer.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that's I think what you are overall.
Well, you know what? I'm kind of like a throwback to the old school, but yet I kind of like Bruno Mars. You know, he's kind of old school, but he's bringing it into now. And I kind of see myself in the same way of what I present.
Yeah. What I mean by the entertainer's entertainer is that you've gotten to know so many different celebrities.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was blown away that you went to Gavin McLeod's funeral.
Oh, yeah. He was such a dear friend. You talk about a supportive, loving person. Every time we would run into each other, he would light up like a Christmas tree and he'd go, Fleet, what are you up to? Oh, what exciting thing are you doing now? Mm-hmm. He always took interest in anybody he met. And he also, I did a musical with him a couple years ago, and he wrote in my script, Fleet, you're an amazing talent. I wish I could do what you do.
Mm-hmm. And talking about 6 degrees of separation, I'm friends with Joe Whelan.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
You know, she looks fantastic. Oh, my God. I hadn't seen her in several years. She looked fantastic.
Yeah. And she was just – and, yeah, we got to know her because of Mark and Brian. And when they went off the air back in 2012, Brian did a podcast, and he and Jill have known each other for many years. And he promised her that if he and Mark ever stopped the show, that they would do something. So they did a podcast for about a year and a half together. And my son Roman and I would frequent their space where they did the podcast and got to know both of them very well. And, you know, and Jill is just a fabulous gal. And, you know, she was nice enough even recently because my son just turned 16 last October. And okay. So I had a few friends of mine who were celebs and go, hey, can you just send a quick video? Because 16 is a big deal and everything. And Jill was one of them. She goes, oh, my God, I knew you when you were 8 and now you're 16. Where did the time go?
That's great. You know. That's awesome.
So, you know, it's six. I mean, between you and I, man, I mean, it's definitely 6 degrees of separation. And I was just kind of blown away by, like, the same people that we know. And, you know, it's so true. The more people you know in the industry, you realize the more how close we are together.
Well, you know, it's really amazing because, like, being out here in Palm Springs, I am just blown away sometimes. Someone that I know in Hollywood, like, you know, it's like 160 degrees away from my personal life and my show business life. I'll be talking to somebody, and here we have the same friends in Hollywood, but we didn't know we knew the same people.
Right.
And it's like, that's really – because they may not even be in the business. And it's like, that's really weird. I mean, it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah. Exactly. So.
Oh, I wanted to share this really quick because
yeah,
I know
go right ahead,
probably how I got involved with this show, that I got a text message from Joe saying that Joe Shavira, the star of the show, saying that
is he really the star of the show?
Yeah, he is. So I said, he said, I know you knew Trini, and I have a new television show and a magazine, and I would like to interview you for it. Uh-huh. And I said, oh, great. And I had met Joe maybe once or twice when him and Trini were out, and he introduced us, but then, you know, it was like brief and move on. So as we're talking, I thought, he really doesn't know what I do. I don't think he has any awareness of what I do. So as we're talking on the phone, I'm shooting him videos and of my performances where I'm hanging from stuff and dancing on tables and all. And all of a sudden he goes, oh my God, I didn't know you were at that kind of level and stuff. I said, well, yeah.
Juilliard's, man, Juilliard's.
He said, well, guess what? You are now part of the JET team, which is the Joe Entertainment team. And I said, right. That's great. And so then a few days later, he contacted me. He says, I want you for my opening act of the show in Vegas. And I said, of course, I'll be there. I'm excited. And we're going to be at the Rockstar. And it's a very unique place. It's have you been inside the Rockstar?
No, I haven't. No. So, I mean, this whole thing for me is going to be a new experience for me also. You know,
well, I just got back from Vegas because we just recorded a song that Trini and Joe wrote called If By Now. And it's kind of like a new We Are the World. And it's for about COVID, after COVID relief and all. And so I had a great time in Vegas, and I happened to go over to the Rockstar. But it's really unique. It's like there's a bridge that goes up between over the audience and one part of it. And I thought, damn, this is set up for me perfect because, you know, I don't stay on stage. You can't tie me down. I said, I'm going to be all over this place.
Sounds like me, because normally, like, when I do my solo shows, you know, everything is wireless from my in-ears to my microphone to my guitar.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I totally get it. I totally get it. So I'm really looking forward, you know, to this whole thing and this whole experience, you know, because I got to know Joe right when Trini passed. We got the news of his passing. We actually, one of our listeners texted us and told us the news. Hey, it's just hit. Trini Lopez has passed away. And I'm going, no, this can't be true or whatever. And sure enough, you know, I go on, you know, Yahoo or whatever, and there it is. Yeah. And I'm going, oh, man. And I called Steve and let him know, and you know, we're both crying on the phone. And, you know, because we got to know Trini. We, you know, we not just the interview, but behind the scenes. I was calling Aura Lee every so often saying, hey, you know, when Trini's done with this, you know, Frank Sinatra record, you know, we want to do another interview. Okay.
Yeah.
And then it's like another project would come in, and she would tell us, okay, well, he's working on this now. So I said, okay, that's fine. Then we'll wait till that's done. And it kept getting pushed back because he kept doing different things.
Right.
And,
right.
Which is fine because, I mean, I mean, to me, that just seemed so Trini, you know, to do different things. And then, of course, COVID hit, and we're like, okay. And I contacted Aura Lee, hey, whenever this thing is over and done with, we'll get together. And she goes, okay, no problem. And, of course, you know, we lose him that year.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it hit us real hard. And so I saw through somebody through Facebook that if you want to talk to his partner, Joe Shavira, here's the number to call or whatever. And that's pretty much what we did. And, you know, so we talked to Joe and asked Joe if he wanted to go on the air with us that following Saturday. And, you know, if it was too soon, you know, I would totally understand. And he said, no, let's go ahead and do it and everything. And then he and I off the air just got real close after that, you know, and talking to each other and everything. So,
you know, August 11th is when he passed. And that's why we're doing the tribute on August 11th in Las Vegas. As a double tribute to him.
Right, Right, exactly. Hold on real quick, Fleet, because we are going to break away from our affiliates right now. So we just want to say for everybody out there in Delmarva and also Lime City Radio, we want to thank you. And, of course, our guest, Fleet Easton, here with us right now. And we will catch you guys next week. However, if you want to continue listening to the show, then hop on over right now to yourweeklydose.com. But until then, take care and be good to each other. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. And we just let go of our affiliates, but we're still on the air.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah. So that's how we got to know Joe overall. And, you know, and he and I have been talking back and forth and everything. And then, to be a part of this whole thing, you know, he called me up and was like, I got the song. And it kind of goes like this. And I think, you know, because you play a couple of different instruments. And I go, yeah. He goes, okay, well, I'm thinking, you know, maybe piano would be good. You know, because you can play piano, right? And I said, oh, a little bit, yeah. And he goes, okay, well, you know, it goes from D minor to B flat to C. Oh, okay, yeah, I can do that, you know, no problem. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay, what does he want me to do? Does he want me to record it and send it to him? Is he going to send me a demo? And I'm going to send him the WAV files of the piano, you know, that he mm-hmm. wants me to record. I had no idea where he was coming from. And he goes, and then also he goes, yeah, that way, you know, I can, you know, be in front of the audience and hold the mic and, you know, kind of entertain the audience a little bit better. Oh, this is for the show. I had no clue.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, you're asking me to come out. Okay. All right. You know, and then I think he forgot I play guitar or whatever. He goes, but you play what other instruments do you play? I said, well, my main one's guitar. And he goes, well, bring that because we're going to be doing this and this and this or whatever. So we'll have you, you know, play on those songs as well.
Okay.
No problem. Yeah, exactly. You know, so I'm just like going, okay. And but I think we're going to have fun with this, though. You know, I think it's going to be a good thing. And he's bringing together, I think, the community of Palm Springs for this show. And a lot of people who are legends, you know, in that community itself, like yourself, Lee, you know.
Right.
So I you know. I've never heard of you, you know, until Joe's PR person told me about you and everything.
Yeah, you know, I never heard about you either until you on the poster.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and I'm going, who are these people? This is – okay, can we change the name to Motley Crue, you know, because that's what this really is. It's a Motley Crue.
It kept growing and growing, and all of a sudden, now there's another person.
I'm waiting for an Elvis impersonator to get on there. You know, I really am. You know, but that's what I mean by you being an entertainer's entertainer is that you know so many people in the industry and you've worked with them. Yes. You told me a beautiful story the other day with Carol Channing.
She was such a dear friend. Well. As I said, I told you yesterday when we were talking, I don't know if I created manifest or whatever, but when I left Florida, I always loved Carol, you know, because I loved Broadway. And I always said, you know, I'm going out there and I'm going to work with her. Well, she had reached a level that she wasn't really doing much anymore. And I really wasn't aware of that because she was getting up there in age. But I had the opportunity to meet her, and then I was asked to be the MC and the entertainment for her Lifetime Achievement Award here in Palm Springs, and it was just amazing. I sat in her lap, and I sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow to her, and then right before she got her award, I sang from the Broadway show Family Opera, This Is the Moment, This Is the Day. And it was so cute. I was sharing with you that she was starting to have a little issues in memory and all.
Right.
We'd always see each other out and stuff, and we'd talk and say hi. So I'm singing to her, I'm over the rainbow, and she's just staring at me intently. I mean, she's got her head up. She never moves. I'll have to send the video to you. She never moves a muscle the whole time. And then at the end, she looks at me and she goes, honey, I don't even know who you are. And you're just singing your little heart out to me. And everything. everybody busted out laughing. And I said, Carol, I said, Carol, you know who I am. We always talk. She goes, oh, do we? Oh, okay.
My name's on the bill, darling.
Wow.
It was cute.
Funny. You know,
she was such a sweetheart. And I'm going to tell you, you talk about somebody that was an amazing person in the business. She was always concerned about her fans and people. And she never wanted to let down or disappoint anyone ever.
Yeah. And that's to me, that's the old good Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Philippe, we got a couple more things before we let you go. But one thing I want to ask, though. The Prince of Palm Springs, man. You actually got the title of Prince from Mario Max Schoenberg of Germany.
Mario Max Schoenberg-Lippe.
How did that come about?
Here's the story. Okay. So I've done over 200 charity events here in Palm Springs, raising money for everybody and everything.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Plus, I fed the homeless 5 days a week for many, many years here. So what they do when they give a star here, you get a star not for just your work, but for what you've contributed to the community. So they started calling me the Prince of Palm Springs.
Got it.
And so we thought, well, you know what? Let's get this sanctioned by the city. So, yeah, you know, make it official. So
what the hell? Why not?
Yeah.
So
we tried to get that happen, and it just didn't happen. So I was in Hollywood. I was invited to a taping of a show. And so we're all there, and I'm in the back, and they have a bar set up. And everybody, you know, they're all trying to get on camera, and I could care less because this is what I do for a living. I really didn't care. It's a reality show. So I'm in the back, and these people are standing at the bar, and there's the Hiltons, and I recognize them, and these other people are standing there. And there's this guy who's like 6'5" or whatever. And I had my hair all spiked up, and I mean, I was really looking way out there. And so he comes over to me, and he says, "So you look very interesting. Who are you?" and I says, "I am Prince Fleet Easton." And he goes, "And what principality do you represent?" And he says, I am his Highness Prince Mario Max Schoenberg Lippe of Germany, and I'm going, and I went, Palm Springs. I wanted to crawl under the table. I was so embarrassed, and so we started laughing, and we became instant friends.
That's awesome.
So the next day he sent me a message saying, "You know what, Fleet?" He said, "What you have created marketably is unbelievable." He said, "You have branded yourself. You can put your name on anything or whatever." So then a couple of days later, I thought, okay, you know what? I got this harebrained idea. I thought, what a publicity stunt if I could get a real prince to crown me and make me a prince. I said, what? That would be amazing beyond belief. So I called him up. I said, "Would you do this?" He said, "I would love to." And he said, "I'm going to bring something special." And I didn't know what it was. So I had the coronation. I think about 350 people attended. They had to turn people away.
Wow. And
he placed the crown.
I can't even get that many people for my birthday.
Oh, no. I've had big birthdays. A matter of fact, I get
Steve.
They were going to have one at the convention center for me because it was getting that large. So he puts the crown on my head, and he presented me with these proclamations naming me Prince Fleet Easton, and that I was the Prince of Palm Springs, and I was named Legendary Entertainer of the World by the Royal Families of Europe in 2016.
Wow.
So that happened, and that's how that came about.
That's some pretty big shoes there.
Well, you know, and for a while I didn't start using it. And one day I was doing something. I said, you know what? I need to step into who I am. This is who I am now. And so I went home and I put Prince right in front of my name. And I thought maybe at first I was going to get, you know, comments. So they, nobody said a word. It was like it was always there. And actually, right now, they no longer call, they just call me Prince. Everybody who knows me, they just call me Prince.
Now, on your car, do you have the little flag so you can park anywhere you want?
No, not yet.
Not yet, okay. Even though you're driving yourself, you know, you still got to have the little flags out in front.
And I don't have diplomatic immunity yet.
Well, you know what, Fleet, you have done so much. You mentioned your charity stuff, and I do want to mention this, man. And anybody who gets involved with charity and the types of charity that they do tells me who they really are deep down, and this is amazing. Like you said earlier, you worked with the homeless shelters, feeding homeless on a daily basis. You also were part of a Friend Anti-Bullying Movement in Hollywood. You're on the executive board of directors for the College of Adaptive Arts in San Jose, California, which is a college for adults with mental and physical challenges. You received the Touching Lives Humanitarian Award in Hollywood for your contribution, for the time that you shared and your talents with different charities throughout your career. You received an Angel of the Year Award in Palm Springs, the Call to Service Award from President Obama in 2014. And, of course, you also recently received a Lifetime Achievement Award also from President Obama. Dude, that tells me how good of a person you are.
And well, I try to be a nice person.
And I couldn't be more happy to be associated with you in any way, shape, or form. It is an honor to do that. And, you know, because like I said, certain charities, they've touched me in a certain way. You know, I was involved with Athletes and Entertainers for Kids for 5 years, which helps underprivileged children in many ways. And, you know, and it was always such a joy to be a part of that. You know, but all the things that you've done, man, you just set the bar up even further. And
well, you know, I've done events for March of Dimes, for the Muscular Dystrophy. You name it, I've been a part of all of it. I've been a part of all of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Fleet, if next time you've got something going on and you need me for anything, I'm a phone call away, dude.
I will put that down in blood.
Yeah.
So you're stuck now.
Absolutely. Because some of the charities that you have done, I'll be honored to be a part of, because of what they are and how you've done it. So.
I did one for St. Jude's, and we raised over $100,000 for St. Jude that night. That was a wonderful event.
Yeah.
And also, I did four different events for the Palm Springs Animal Shelter because I love four-legged children. At one time, I had 40 four-legged children. So that's a dear thing to my heart. And I love it when I go into the Palm Springs Animal Shelter and I meet somebody that I haven't met before, a volunteer. I always say that I go in and I say, okay, show me what my money paid for.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, let's go ahead and learn a little bit more about you, Fleet, in a little bit different way, something that we call the island game.
Okay.
So, let's see. I want to make sure the music's not too loud for you, though. Okay, so you're on a deserted island. You're retired now.
Yeah.
So you're the prince of this island now. And you can only take one candy bar with you. What would it be?
God, candy bar. I don't eat candy, but let me think. That's why I have this little waistline. I would take anything that's covered in caramel.
Anything covered in caramel. I like that. I like it. You can cover a lot of things in caramel.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. Okay. You could only take one album with you. What would it be?
Oh, of course, the Sean Roberts album.
The whole collection, the best of. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. you can only take one movie with you.
Let me think. Somewhere in Time.
Somewhere in Time. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. You can only... What type of food would you take?
God. Steak.
Ooh, what kind of steak?
Anything lunch boil, T-bone.
All of it.
Tommy Hawk, I'm a steak lover.
You can take the whole cow.
Take the whole cow. There you go.
Yeah, take the whole cow. Exactly.
That's a good answer.
And then after you're done, you turn the cow inside out and you make menudo. So it's pretty simple. Yeah. It's easy as that. I get it. Okay, here's a tough one here. You could take one person for conversation's sake. It can't be a significant other. But it could be anybody fictitious or non-fictitious or even somebody through history.
Okay.
For conversation, who would it be?
Let me think.
Einstein. That would be a good one. That would be.
I'm a student of like the theory of relativity and time, the time continuum. And I love all that.
Yeah, that would be really. God, that would be a good conversation for Einstein. That really would. Okay.
I may not understand what he's saying, but it would be interesting.
That's true. Okay, now this is a tough one though.
Okay.
You could take one person for sexual gratification. Once again, it cannot be a significant other. Who would it be, Fleet?
Oh, God. Myself. I don't know.
He's his own best friend.
Yeah. No one knows me but me.
The what?
No one knows me but me.
That's a loaded question.
It is. That's why we ask it, you know.
I don't want to leave anybody out, so you know.
Yeah. So everybody come on over then.
There you go.
Exactly. There you go. So those are the island questions there for you, Fleet, just to kind of get to know you, man.
You got my face is red.
Oh good. I'm kinda glad. Well, we're almost over with the show, Fleet, but we're gonna do one more game with you here.
Okay.
And this is called Quiz Me, Quiz You, and it kind of goes something like this, basically.
Okay.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's the new game show that made Muddy Waters wish he was a country western singer. Quiz Me, Quiz You.
All right. Okay. So our intern Christopher is here, and he's going to read the questions for us. This is just a potpourri, again, of trivia questions. Your name is your buzzer, so you got to remember to call out your name if you think you know the answer.
Okay.
The more precog you are, the better it is. And let me make sure. Okay. Is your mic working?
Test.
All right, we got him going on. So.
All right.
Oh boy.
You ready, Fleet?
Oh, yeah. As ready as I'm going to get. Go ahead.
All right. Let's start with question number one.
Question one. Here we go.
Which 20th century U.S. president and vice president was not elected to either office?
Oh, God.
Ooh. Ooh, that's a good one. Steve wants to say it. I can tell.
That's how good it is because we can't.
That's
even
a good
think
question.
Of
we're all like,
gosh.
Somebody that took over. Let's see. Johnson.
Fleet
Johnson.
Nope.
Okay.
Johnson.
It wasn't Lyndon Johnson.
No.
Oh.
The okay. initials are GF.
GF.
GF. Those are the initials.
GF.
Of his name.
GF.
Yes.
Sean.
Sean.
Sean, that's my name first. That's what I need to do first. Yeah. Gerald Ford.
Correct.
Ah.
Could have just fell into it.
Yeah, literally. Literally.
We're falling into question number two.
Next.
In which decade of the 20th century, because we're still staying there, was Lauren Bacall born?
Ooh. Lauren Bacall.
Don't need the exact
What decade?
Yeah, just the decade. Don't need the exact year.
Fleet. 20s? Fleet, 20s? The
yep,
1920s.
Good job.
All right, Fleet. Fleet's on the board.
Yay!
And we're going into number three. What type of puzzle first appeared in New York World in 1913?
Fleet.
Yeah.
The crossword puzzle.
Correct.
Ooh. Fleet's on a roll.
Yeah, two in a row. Let's see if we can get question number four now.
All right.
What music group had an 80s number one hit with the song Centerfold?
Oh, Sean.
Sean.
Jay Giles Band.
Yep.
Ha ha. All right. Fleet and I are tied.
Yep, and Steve's not on the board. Question number five.
Come on, Steve.
Gotta catch you up.
Steve, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just checking, Steve. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Five. All right. The fairy turned into a golden carriage for Cinderella to ride to the ball in what?
The fairy?
The fairy turned... Oh, I think I misspoke that.
Okay. Say it again. Yeah.
The fairy turned what into a golden carriage?
Steve.
Fleet. Pumpkin.
Fleet. We'll give it to him.
Yeah, all right. Pumpkin. Yes. Fleet's got three.
John's got two.
Steve's got goose egg.
All right.
Zilch.
Let's see if we can get question number six now.
Dick. Nada. Nothing. He's going to kill me at the end of the show. All right.
Yes, he is.
What question are we on?
We're on six. All right. In 1976, Michael Pfeiffer, probably butchered that, was voted what in California?
What? Michael Pfeiffer?
No, Michelle. That's a Michelle.
Oh.
I cannot pronounce names apparently today.
Pfeiffer's. I mean, Pfeiffer, that means it's got to be Michelle Pfeiffer then.
There you go. That's probably the name. I knew I was butchering it.
Oh, can you say the question again now?
All right.
The right name?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. In 1976, okay. Michelle
Pfeiffer
was voted what in California?
Fleet. best actress.
Nope. That is incorrect.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Steve, you got an answer?
Oh.
Yeah, Steve.
Go.
All right, Steve.
Honorary governor.
Nope. John, you got something before we come back in?
Miss Artichoke.
No.
Okay.
You got something, please?
Miss California. I don't know.
You got to think a little bit smaller.
Smaller.
Like maybe
Miss Orange County.
Orange County, yeah, Miss Orange County.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah. That was pretty good. Boy, you pulled that one out, Fleet.
Yeah, I pulled out of something. I'm not sure what it was, but I pulled.
There you go.
All right.
Hope it didn't hurt.
Yeah. All right, let's pull out number seven now.
Okay.
Yeah. In Castroville, California, who was crowned the first artichoke queen in 1947?
Hey, there was an artichoke queen. I'll be damned.
How about that?
You know what? I just read this not too long ago. Oh, my God. Let me see if I can pull it out of my head.
Okay. All right. All right. We'll give you a little bit of time, Fleet. Here you go.
You see, I said pull it out of my head. You see, I'm cleaning it up. Oh, crap. Miss Artichoke.
Pulled it out yet?
No, I can't pull it out. I just read this a while back.
Well... Sean, Steve, got any guesses?
Artichoke.
See, Miss Artichoke.
No, not Miss Artichoke. The artichoke became the first artichoke queen.
The artichoke queen. Betty White.
Nope.
Okay.
Steve?
I got nothing.
She was hot.
She was hot?
Yeah.
Jessica Simpson.
Nope.
Oh.
No.
You got to think 1947.
No. Oh, 47. Okay. All right.
Yeah, we got into 1947.
Oh, 1947. Who was hot in 1947?
Steve.
Marilyn Monroe.
There you go. Oh, Steve's on the board.
Yeah. Steve got one.
I was reading that all these titles that she had gained, I mean, some really weird ones.
And I think this is one of them.
Yeah, it was.
All right. Let's see how weird number eight is. Okay. Hank Aaron ties Babe Ruth for the all-time home run record with his 714th at what stadium?
Oh, God. Oh, I should know this.
Yes, you should. Well, while he's mumbling, can anybody
It starts with a C.
Well, the city does.
City. Always starts with a C. Damn.
Any guesses from the other contestants?
Steve.
Steve.
You go for
Steve?
Wait.
You got it, Fleet?
Something's rolling around in there.
Okay, Steve. Okay,
Cincinnati.
That is the city, but what stadium?
Reds, the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, but there's a certain name for the stadium, though.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Is it three rivers? No.
That's close. It's close.
One and a half rivers.
No.
three quarters of a river?
Johnny Rivers. Stadium.
No, it's Riverfront Stadium.
Riverfront. Ah!
Cincinnati. Maybe you guys have a lot better luck in number nine.
There was water involved somewhere.
All right,
yeah, you were guessing the rivers. You were getting up the river.
Here we go.
All right. For which movie did Cher win the Academy
Award?
Steve.
Fleet.
Go ahead. Oh, my God.
Okay. Steve Fleet. First. Fleet's next.
Moonstruck.
Yeah. I knew it was Moon, but I was going Moon. I couldn't
give it to
struck.
Both of you. We'll give it to both of you.
All right.
Both of you get a point.
There you go. They both get half a point.
Yeah. All right. Let's see who can split the difference in number 10. In Camden, Tennessee, how does country music superstar Patsy Cline die?
Klein.
Thank you.
Fleet.
Sean. Ah,
Flea?
Shit.
Fleet.
Fleet.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go. No, you got it first.
Yeah, you got it first.
Who said first?
You did. You did.
Okay. Airplane crash.
She got killed in an airplane crash.
Good job, Fleet. Fleet kicked her butt, man.
A little bit.
Yeah, you did. How many? Fleet got what, six, seven?
Let's go with yes.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
About six or seven, yeah. Yeah. I got the rest.
Hey,
Steve got
more than us.
Yeah.
I'm the
more
guest.
Steve, at least.
Exactly. Well, Fleet, it has been an honor, buddy, to get to know you and everything and interview you. And I'm really looking forward to watching you perform come August the 11th. And it's going to be in Vegas again. And what's the name of the place again?
The Rockstar Bar.
Rockstar Bar. In Vegas. Get tickets. You can find Fleet on Facebook, but the main thing is we want to get your tickets. Look for, was it Joe Chavera Fan Club? I think it is. They're selling the
Joe Chavera Fan Club, and they can also find me on Prince Fleet Easton, and I always tell people, if you want to connect with me, please send a private message telling me where you heard me or seen me, and because, you know, nowadays you got to be very careful. You never know who's trying to creep into your world. But if you want to, you know, connect and be friends, just send me a private message.
Yeah, and if you really want to get to know him better, just drop my name and he'll ignore you completely.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's easier that way. I'll be the screener for Fleet, so.
Well, how can I forget you? I'm taking your greatest hits with me to the island.
Exactly. Well, Fleet, thank you so much for being on the show, man. I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to meeting you in person and also sharing the stage with you, buddy.
Well, I want to thank you, and I want to thank Steve that I really didn't hear from. But, hey, Steve, I hope you
I was just enjoying the moment. Although I do have one weird question to ask you.
Okay.
Now, you're from Akron, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you ever cross paths with Devo?
Yes, I did. They were dear friends of mine.
What? There you go. I wondered about that. I didn't know if they were a little too early or not. But.
No. Well, I was young, but we were all, you know, I was in my early, I was 10 years old? No.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah. No, I used to hang out with them, and I was one of their pinheads that used to flop around on stage with them when they were appearing in Kent.
Did you really?
Yeah.
That
and
is so
also,
cool.
I did some of their early 8mm videos, and
oh, that's funny.
And actually, on that album where they're wearing the sunglasses with has the nose on them and stuff,
yeah,
I bought those at the Akron Army and Navy surplus store for $1.50 a piece and gave those to them.
Far out.
I love it.
But I don't know where they got the flower pots. That's they were on their own on that one.
Oh, man. Well, once again, Fleet, I can't wait to sit down with you, because I know where you're staying at with Lana and everything, and to party with you even after the show. It's going to be so much fun, so I'm really looking forward to it.
I'll drop a little one thing, too. I knew Chrissy Hynde before she became famous.
Ooh.
She was going to Kent State. We were in her dorm room, and I remember the day she said, you know what, I'm going to go to England. I'm going to become a big star. She only had $500. She went there. It took her about 6 months to a year, and she did it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. $500 to go overseas. That must have been a good exchange rate then.
Yep.
All right, Fleet. We will see you then August 11th, my friend.
All right. You guys have an awesome day, and I will see you in Vegas.
Will do, buddy. Take care.
Take care.
All right.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Beautiful tats all over my back. Makes me so proud, I'm going to shout it out loud.
Another tattoo. Ha. No part of me's blank. I'm really ink obsessed. Yeah. It's like an art show the moment that I get undressed. Yeah. At every job interview, they're just so impressed. Really? 'Cause I got all my X lines on my chest.
Gotta love Weird Al. All right. Well, thank you so much for Fleet Easton on being on the show. You need to know him a little bit better, and can't wait to see him August 11th in Vegas. And again, check out Joe Chavira Fan Club on Facebook. There's a link there. You can get tickets for it, and check it out, because we'll both be there, and Fleet will be opening up the show, so can't wait for it. In the meantime, the show's website is yourweeklydose.com, Facebook page, Your Weekly Dose, Twitter and Instagram is at Your Weekly Dose 1.
You find me, Steve, on Facebook, Steve Silva, on Twitter, at SilvaLining69.
And if you want to find me, Sean, on any of the social media, it's simply Sean R. Unplugged. And I will see you guys tonight at Phil Tranny's from 6 to 9 p.m. So come on out and listen to some good music I might be doing. I don't know. It could be so-so music. You never know. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. I'm just going to wing it, baby. Just wing it. So, but also, don't forget, guys, you can listen to past moments of Your Weekly Dose on Delmarva Radio at 7 a.m. Wednesday through Friday mornings, and also on Lime City Radio every Wednesday through Friday, but starting at noon. Until then, we'll catch you guys next week. So be good to each other, people.
Sing like you're in the shower, world.
We do all the time.
And what the heck? There's still some room on my neck.
Couple square inches left, maybe a squid or a tarantula or something, I don't know. Surprise me. Ow, mother.
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.